Well, welcome, Ewan.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for our second Think Visual YouTube series. We have started it this year, so it's been really, really fun and exciting to speak to all the speakers privately. And this is my first one, so it's going to be fun.
Cool. I'm delighted to be here.
So, first of all, you're wearing a Sketchnote Army t-shirt, which
Yes, I am.
Pretty
Came
cool.
Prepared.
Well, yeah.
I don't have a Shapeshifters one, so.
But you're a MicroD fan.
I am now. Funnily enough, though, I came to that later. Like, I know a lot of people, the gateway drug, the introduction was Sketchnote, you know, MicroD.
Sketchnote Army, yeah.
But for me, it wasn't. I came to it later, and I came to it because I was, early on in my visual journey, I was looking for inspiration from other visual artists, and I started, I got into the podcast, and I was just, I would scribe the podcast
in
real time and try and pick up all the styles that and learn from the styles of these amazing visual artists.
Oh, that's a great way to learn.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know about the podcast until a year ago when Mike reached out to Alan to do an interview, and then I did an interview with him recently as well. So that was cool. But yeah, he was actually, his book was one of my first introductions to sketchnoting. And you've got the sketchbook.
I've got the book, yeah.
You've got all the
I'm a total fanboy now.
Yeah.
This is my favorite paper book because you cannot get bleed through. It's amazing paper, and if you are new to it, it does have all the little, you know, the high-level stuff that he talks about, the patterns, etc.
It's awesome.
So a great introduction. I'm trying to think. It might be Graphic Gear I got this from.
Yeah.
And while we're on the subject of toys, this is my favorite ever pen. The Funasuki with the hard tip.
Is that Japanese pen?
Yeah. So I'm a bit of a Noiland fanboy because I was Bicablo originally. But this is my favorite pen. I use this for everything.
Okay. You'll send me a link and we'll put it in the notes. Okay, cool. Yeah. Big shout out to Sketchnote Army and to Graphic Gear. So Graphic Gear is Melbourne based, right? They provide all the Noiland gear for Australia.
And Noiland, the big pens, I've got some in my bag. The big pens for, like, you know, facilitation and what that kind of work, the Noiland wedge tips are unbeatable. But the smaller ones, I prefer this fella here.
Yep.
And if you do order from Graphic Gear, this isn't an advert, by the way, but if you order them, you get these lovely little personal notes.
Yes,
like from the company.
Very thoughtful.
Yeah.
We'll put a note, we'll put a link in as well for all the Australia-based artists.
And I might get a discount for mentioning them.
We'll make sure to tag them so they know. So tell me a little bit about you. Like, how did you... What's your story?
So, funnily enough, when I was thinking about coming in today, I was thinking about, you know, everyone says you're really artistic as a kid.
Mm.
And I don't think I was.
Oh. Right?
But then I started thinking back, visuals were always important to me because I didn't read when I was young. Like, the teachers couldn't get me to read. So one of my teachers at primary school used to draw stories for me with little stick figures, and they were about things that I was interested in at the time, like soldiers and football and this kind of stuff. And she'd draw these little personal stories, and that got me into reading. And I loved comic books, specifically Asterix the Gaul, if you know Asterix.
Yeah.
I don't think I was a visual learner. A note taker supreme, but not visually. And I drifted out of, I had nothing to do with visualization, although I almost became an architect and I loved technical drawing.
Okay.
I ended up not going down that route, chose another route, which I kind of regret to this day.
What was the other route? Project management or?
No, it was to do with building.
Okay. I was still in that realm. But
in that realm, but not missing the creativity.
Mm.
And I think this is what led me back was a need for creativity. And so about, I think it was 2021, so it was in COVID because it was all virtual. I was getting really frustrated at the lack of cut through you get when you write blogs and stuff like this, and people just don't have the attention.
No.
And so it was a guy, a friend of mine, Fran, who's now out in WA, he started posting these little things on LinkedIn, these little one little single visuals. And so I pinged him and I said, what the hell is that? And he goes, oh, I did this thing called Bicablo, which is the German codification of making visualization simple and available to everyone. Ideas, not art, as they say. And so I did a 2-day course with Mark Hundleby, who's the trainer, the Bicablo trainer in Australia, and it just blew my mind. I posted on LinkedIn, I think, and various other things like Facebook the next day with my first ever picture. And a week later, I was presenting at a town hall just to do with work. And I had this huge visual. And all of a sudden, people were just going, like, they were responding. And all of a sudden, the message that was landing on deaf ears when you were talking or showing slides, just a one-page visual was just like, was getting so much attention from people.
That's incredible. Wow.
It was. And like, so it became a bit of a, I couldn't stop. And I did, I kind of said to myself, I'm going to draw every day. And I almost did that, not quite, but for 2 years, I almost drew every day, even if it was just a little doodle. Mm. And I'm going to share pretty much everything. So I made a commitment to myself that I would work openly. And so it's quite funny now. I look back and I'm like, geez, these are terrible. But that was the journey.
That's amazing. So you were sharing it on LinkedIn, or was there different platform? Was it internal at work?
Both.
Okay.
So I did get a bit of a name at work for guerrilla posting. So I'd draw like a poster about something and I'd stick it up in the kitchen at work around the place next to the lifts. And so all these, like, nobody ever took them down. They're probably, well, the building's not there anymore, but.
But that's during COVID. So people were probably very happy to have a little bit of a, you know, something different happening.
Yeah, and it was great. Like, I had a whole bunch next to the lifts and people would just be waiting for the lifts and they'd be like, you could see they were engaging with the content. It was work content. And it was just, that was quite inspiring. And I was also posting on the internal work sites, the workplace there. And I had like one of the C-level, I won't name names, but somebody who's, you know, one of the senior, very senior people at Macquarie was pinging me going, talk to me about this. And so I got a few little gigs, like, you know, sketch noting and stuff for around the place.
Was there much awareness about sketch noting before that?
No, there had been a little bit. A friend of mine now, Steve, had done some sketch noting previously and run a couple of little courses, which myself and another graphic type, Kevin, we rebooted that, and we taught sketch noting basics to like about 150 people over a couple of years. So that there had been a little bit, but I was so into it that I was gathering all the, anyone who had ever drawn anything was, I got them posting it, and it was great. And the C-level person I mentioned, that I was talking to her about sustainability, because I'd drawn this picture and posted it, and she was asking questions, and she sent me away with some homework. She said, can you draw this thing around sustainability that in the bank? And so I went and did it, and she goes, you know, nobody ever gives me visuals. I'm a visual person. And it left a mark, because you think, you know, busy, highly professionals, yeah. Like, why would they be into visuals? But, you know, they're humans. They love visuals. So
it's actually really interesting, because I can't think of anyone who doesn't say, I mean, I know it's not 100% of people are visual, but almost every client we've had has said, oh, you know, this is really good because I'm a visual person. Yeah. You know, this is, I really can get it. I'm on board. But it's often, I think we find that it's hard to get it into, like, get buying within an organization. And it sounds like you kind of really, really were a champion within, like, internally.
Yeah, and, you know, Macquarie had a tech conference, and I pulled together, I think it was about 10 of us, and we went to all these different sessions, and people sketchnoted all the different things, and we posted them and got a great response. The one thing I would say is, in a big corporate organization, you will push up against things like branding. Whilst on a personal level and an informal level, people love the drawing, you're not gonna, well, my experience was, the brand is very protected, and
they're not gonna post it online or anything
So, I mean, I post on LinkedIn and I also use Instagram, but that's me outside of any.
But I find that these kinds of visualizations, they're really useful and very valuable internally, for teams to be engaged, for everyone to be on the same page. Like, I don't know if you've used it in meetings.
Yeah, so that's probably where I use it most.
Yeah.
Facilitation, just shared understanding if we're brainstorming, things like that.
Yeah, yeah. And do you find that engagement's higher?
Oh, yeah.
Deeper?
Yeah, so as part of my role, I've run a lot of retrospectives over the years, and I would rarely use, Sarah talked about, she loves the sailboat. I would never use the sailboat. I would draw something specific
different?
For that team.
Oh, okay, interesting. Yeah. So in context.
Totally. Okay. Yeah. Or, I don't know if you've looked through some of my work, but I love like pop references and movies and this stuff. And so I quite often, use that kind of things like Harry Potter retro, kind of things.
That's really great, because I think most people can relate to those, and it kind of breaks the pretense of, we're in a professional setting. Sometimes you really need those human stories that you relate to the most.
Yeah. I think I have got caught out a couple times where you have an assumption, like I think it was, I did something, it might have been Three Little Pigs or something, and I thought that was a universal story. Apparently the teams in India didn't know the story.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was the Three Little Pigs, maybe that is a universal story, but I think, the cultural side of it, you have to be, but you can't assume that everyone has seen an Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's interesting, because when we're live graphic recording at an event or something like that, often we do use pop culture references, and it's not always, sometimes it's because it's coming up in the conversation, when there's a workshop, something like that, lots of times it's, casual conversation, so people do reference things that are quite personal, but sometimes it's just an idea that we just thought of because of our experience, I'm a big fan of Indiana Jones or Star Wars, and so I'll draw something like that. And we don't often think about it in terms of everyone needs to know it. That's interesting. I feel like it's still okay, though, because there is an aspect of graphic recording that's very personal to the artist, right? It's kind of an art and science.
Yes.
So you're listening, you're synthesizing, but at the same time, you're bringing your own experiences and your own hobbies and everything you enjoy into it, to create like a really good piece of art, right?
Yeah, it's your view of it's your interpretation.
Yeah.
So Mark, my trainer, when I did Bicablo, we as part of Bicablo, the 2D course, we did a little bit of graphic recording, and I still find that the hardest of all the visual arts is the real time graphic recording. But Mark talked about, don't overdo it. You just want the key points, and specifically, and this clearly registered with me, he said, look for those little human moments, the asides, when the presenter says something off the cuff, makes a joke.
Yep.
It's like, if you capture those things, 6 months later, you'll go back and you'll look at a sketch note and you'll be like, ha, I remember that. And it's like, those are the human moments.
Yeah, exactly. They're the most memorable moments as well.
Yeah.
So everyone there would have remembered them. So they can actually act as a bit of an anchor.
Totally. And, right. you know, you think about how you would, if you were recording just, you know, a very dry note-taking style, you would, you probably ignore that because it's not the content.
Yeah, true.
But what, you know, what you learn when you're visualizing is that's the key moment, that's the anchor.
I guess that's the difference between note-taking where it's more like minutes and it's more objective and graphic recording where you're telling a story. So it's much more emotional.
Yeah, and I'll go back to, you know, my own experience is that 6 months down the line, I mean, I've got a couple in here. This is a new book, so I don't have a lot, but that was the Sydney Design Meetup. And just a couple little things that they jumped out. Like, so there was something about democratizing optometry, and it's, so I've done Harry Potter's glasses there. But, and there was a thing about severed limbs. I don't know if you remember that. It was the play park, I think, wasn't it? And those are things you remember.
That was really funny. Yeah. And also scary, a little bit scary. Yeah. But yeah, yeah, exactly. And when you're graphic recording, actually, I'm curious, because you said you were a very, like a note taker. And when I was growing up, I was a very good note taker. So I would pride myself on not missing one word. Like I can actually write exactly what everyone was saying, right? How did you move from that to, you know, you kind of need to let go a little bit, right?
I've not totally moved, I'll be honest with you. You can knock this off the camera later, but I still find myself, like this is an online book, that makes it easier, but I still have books of line notes. Mm. They do tend to have little doodles in them. I sign all my work ATW, which is 1,000 words. That was what it stood for. And that was as much a challenge for me as it was some kind of, you know, name.
I like that, yeah.
It was a challenge for myself to go, I can either write 1,000 words or I can do some, you know, graphic work and some Easter eggs, visual Easter eggs, as we call them. So I've not totally got over the note-taking yet.
Yeah, I totally get it. I understand. But yeah, I find it interesting because I think it's definitely a different, like you're using a different approach. Because when you're note-taking, you're just kind of just downloading everything exactly as it is. But when you're drawing, you're kind of processing and thinking a bit more.
And that's exhausting and that's really hard to hold those, you know, hold the listen in one ear whilst you're still processing the previous piece and trying to come up with something creative there. But I do think it is an act of creation, and I think that's the real difference is that you're putting so much energy into it, even something as, you know, a little teddy bear in a box, or the L90 bus here going up to Palm Beach. And that was Lara's when she did her talk at Think Visual. You put so much energy into the process that you are listening really hard. Mm. So I think you compare that to just scribing line for line. It's just going over your head.
Yep. Yeah. You just have to kind of read it again later.
Yeah. And you know, I'm not saying you can't take stuff in like that, but I come back to notes 6 months later and it's lost on me. I come back to a picture 6 months later and I'm like, oh yeah.
So what's the biggest thing you want to bring out of visual thinking, like your practice of visual thinking in your own context or in your own career?
So whilst I use it in my job as an agile coach, for me, the biggest thing I'm an activist. I read deeply and think deeply about what I would call the meta crisis, the big wicked problems of our time. Mm. And for me, visualization is fundamental to that. So I started out trying to draw these interlocking systems, and it's just too big. Mm. But the visualization helped me get my head around, you know, the relationships between systems and the interplay between systems. And then how I try to articulate that is the real challenge, and that's probably where I'm going to go with the talk that we're going to do, is how do you communicate huge subjects in one visual? It's, you know, not easy.
Yeah.
And so I started out trying to draw everything, and my evolution has led me to little moments. So I tend to now draw like small pictures as opposed to big, overblown visuals that try and connect everything.
Mm.
Now I'm tending to pick up on a small moment. So I recently did a bunch of, I think, six maybe cartoons. I've never done a cartoon strip, so I did this, created these characters called Sushi and Sprat, and it was all about essentially what the plastics are doing to the ocean. And it was little moments to try and articulate big problems.
Mm.
And I don't know if you're in that. I'm a bit of a musician, and there's about to be a word for this in German. I should have looked it up, but if you're familiar with Billy Bragg's music, he sings these songs that are little kitchen sink dramas, little personal stories, mm-hmm. but he's telling the big systemic problem. You know, he's talking about the big cultural thing that this exists within.
That's very interesting. That's cool. That's cool. It sounds like it actually has more impact than trying to tell the whole story, because that would be very overwhelming.
Yeah, and yeah.
So simply, that's what you want to do.
I still do. I still occasionally go back to those kind of big relationship pictures, but what I've found is that it is overwhelming, and you can't do it justice. Complex systems are so, the relationships are there's so many more relationships than you can even understand, and so I think trying to visualize all of them is a redundant task anyway, because you're going to miss some just through your own, you know, lack of knowledge.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think what you're trying to do with those little stories is very important. Have you heard of systems thinking?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think systems thinking definitely makes use of visual thinking to try to tell those really complex stories and complex systems. But I think the biggest role visual thinking plays is collaboration. So like being able to bring all the different voices, all of the different people who do different roles or different aspects of the system together to be able to visualize it and bring it all into, okay, what's the biggest big picture, and then how do we zoom in on those little things?
Yeah.
But it is definitely a very big project.
Yeah, it is. And so I when Sarah was giving her talk, she was talking about was it Venn diagrams and stuff.
Yeah.
And I see activism in three ways. This is just my view of it. So I see there's the first thing is self.
Mm-hmm.
So like, what is my own education? Like, what is my own actions that I can take?
Yep.
And then at the other end of the scale, there's the how people come together. So movements. And I think, so when I'm doing a lot of my visualization around things like the meta crisis, I'm targeting this space. I'm trying to get people thinking about topics, you know, plastic in the ocean, whatever it may be.
Yep.
And but then in the middle here, there's community. And I know a lot of the work that you and Alan do so beautifully is around community. And so I think I tend to draw either for myself or for the movements, but I think I need to be more active in the community, but also that will probably lead me to drawing more at a community level.
Mm.
So that's just how I see activism, as those three.
Yeah.
Sort of, maybe they're, I don't know if they're interrelated.
Yeah,
or whatever,
I was just going to ask if they somehow overlap.
Well, they definitely overlap. Whether they're subset of each other, I'm not 100% sure. I don't think they are, because I think, yeah, so it's probably, Sarah will be really upset with my rubbish Venn diagrams, but it's probably something like that.
And communities in the middle.
I think it is. It's both macro and it's human interaction too.
It's kind of like they're leading into each other.
Yeah.
Because you can't start a movement by yourself. and you need a community. But to start a community, you need the self.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it all starts with self-education and with passion, and it's with action. You know, how can I live my life in a way that is authentic to creating the systems and the future that I want for my kids and for myself? Mm. So I think it starts with yourself, and you know, if we were training leadership teams, we'd probably have that same line as well. If we're coaching leadership teams. But me tilting at windmills is a redundant process. Well, it's not redundant, but it has little reach. If you can build movements around these ideas, then that's when we'll get change. We'll get societal change, and we'll start moving the systems to be more fit for purpose.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have
easy job?
Easy job, yeah. Big job. Do you have, I guess as we wrap up, do you have any advice for people who are in a similar position, maybe in a big corporation, who they themselves see the value of visual thinking, but they don't know how to, perhaps, or how would they actually starting a movement within their organization?
So it's specific to visual thinking. You need the courage to share. I don't know what the stats are. Everyone has different opinions, but most people are visual in some nature.
Yeah.
And people respond to visuals. But lots of people, even if they doodle on their own notes, don't share them. So the advice I would give is start sharing, even if you think it's embarrassing, that little stick figure that you did. You share with your team, you know, you put a couple little visual Easter eggs in your meeting notes and share with your team. People will respond. And from there, it's about dropping your ego and just... It's, you know, I see some of the visual artists around and I'm thoroughly embarrassed at my sketches, but it's about communication. It's not about the best visuals. Mm-hmm. So if you can communicate with your visuals, then you're doing everyone a favor, including yourself, I think. So just share and you'll get that response and you know, you might build, other people might start sharing theirs.
I love that. So basically, you're being a bit vulnerable. You're allowing yourself to be vulnerable, and then other people will just kind of be able to open up because of that.
Yeah, and you know, I think vulnerability is a great word for this. Like, you know, any form of creativity, but visualization, you're putting yourself out there. Mm. Like, it's an imperfect art. You know, it's you're never finished.
Yeah.
But you have to share it at some point.
And I think we judge ourselves too much. I think you're right. It's actually about thinking and about communicating. So, and I love your drawings, by the way. Everyone has a style and it's very unique, but we're very tempted to judge ourselves against others and kind of put ourselves in like, oh no, I need to get to this level. But it's just about going back to that child and kind of letting go, being like, you know, whatever comes out, that's what I have at the moment.
Yeah.
I guess that's what opens up for improvement.
Yeah, the analogy I would use is you go to a campsite and there's somebody has a guitar.
Yep.
And they play a little song on the guitar. And they're probably a million miles away from being a professional musician, but in the moment, it's authentic, it's beautiful, and people sing along with them.
Yeah.
And I think when it comes to visualization, that's kind of way where I look at some of the work and I'm like, I'm miles away from that. But then I have people come up to me and say, geez, you should do this for a living. And I'm like, I'm rubbish, you know? But again, I think it comes back to what we're trying to achieve. We're not here to make beautiful art. We're here to communicate, to
achieve, you know, our purpose, to make change through visual thinking, right?
Yeah, you don't have to be an artist to do that. I mean, we've got Alan here. Who is an artist, but not all of us come from an artistic background. That's okay. Yep. I think that's healthy.
Yeah, and I think Alan would say the same thing. Well, thank you, Ewan. If people want to find you online or connect with you, where should they go?
So the two main places I play is LinkedIn, and that's, these days I'm mainly focused there on the meta crisis, and but also some agile work on that on LinkedIn, and Instagram ATW Visual is my little name, 1,000 words, and that's, it's a lot of the same content, but I do post some things there that are probably not applicable for LinkedIn. I'll just, a quick story to finish. The reason I chose not to use my own name was because I thought I was gonna be this political cartoonist. And I spent 2 months drawing Scott Morrison's. Like, I had thousands and thousands of Scott Morrison's.
Story, yep.
And thinking I'm gonna destroy this idiot politician. And but I started thinking of ideas, and I couldn't even come up with anything. The reality was so crazy of what was happening at the time. I was just like, I can't even do justice to the satire of this. So that's why I chose a name that wasn't me. I thought I'd better separate the professional and the personal. But to be honest, it's I just post the same things mainly.
It's a good story. Also a good name. I like 1,000 words. It's it sounds like it challenges you to just kind of keep going as well. So we will link to all these in the notes, and people can maybe hopefully connect with you. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.